You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3. The show with nonstop chirps.
Club slipped out of his hand.
Moisture in the air. That's my favorite one. A little bit of moisture up there.
But if you're a 30 handicap, dude, you can't even begin to say that.
No.
Because your ball's going sideways no matter what.
Right. There's no spin on it.
There's just a knuckleball into hell.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
Final hour, Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. As of tomorrow, 3 hours of TV. The 4 and 5 p.m. hour will be up on TSN 4, and the 6 p.m. hour will be up on TSN 2. So we're in our new studios. We've been in here the past couple of days. We feel pretty good about it. Brian Hayes, the O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles, McLennan, Bob McKenzie, your hockey insider later in the hour. See if we can get the numbers on John Cooper's extension, the head coach of Tampa.
Probably
got an extension.
Few bucks.
Think he's making Babcock money?
No, but he's probably, I mean, tax-free, or not tax-free. It may work out to be.
I think it's $3 or $4 million.
I would say $4 million.
So, yeah, I mean, you do
that's Babcock money.
Yeah, that's about right. In terms of the actual cash you're putting in your pocket.
Correct.
He's making a lot. He should make that kind of money.
Yeah, look at his record.
They're a great team.
They are.
Like, he's they're clearly the best team. You think, oh, so now you're at a point where you think he's going to win the coach of the year?
I am voting, and I am going to rely on you guys. I would like to have several debates on it before I actually put my final.
I think it's a slam dunk. I don't care what Barry Trotz has done on the island. Goals against, best to worst, or worst to first. It's like, this guy, this record. It just bugs me because every year,
it's the new guy.
The superior team that just always gets ignored. It's like, forget about that, coach. They had, this guy's going to have 130 points.
I think John Cooper's a lock for me personally.
Me
but
too.
I'm struggling with if it's 2 and 3 or whatever. Because I think there's a list of 6 or 7 guys who could be in there.
Well, like I would vote for Cooper, but honestly, I got the impression 2 weeks ago Barry Trotz was a lock. So what has changed in the NHL community, online, on shows, on radio?
I never actually got that impression.
Really?
I mean, maybe there's a lot of buzz for sure, but you're right. From worst to best as far as goals against, this is a team that wasn't expected to do anything.
Let's not forget about the guy that left on July 1st either.
Yeah.
Like that, Cooper's done an incredible job. I think I would vote for him because when you're lapping the field in the cap era,
yeah,
it's a truly remarkable season. But the fact that Barry Trotz did not allow his New York Islanders to have a John Tavares hangover,
right,
I think is impressive.
It is.
And I don't think that gets brought up enough. It's one thing that they're markedly improved defensively.
Right.
And their goaltending factors into that a lot because they've had two goalies that have really performed well, Robin Leonard in particular.
Yeah.
But he never allowed for an excuse to be built in. Johnny T's gone, so hey, what are you going to do, guys?
But I guess my question would be, so the coach deserves love. Would Lou be up for executive of the year?
No, because he didn't get the big fish. You know what I'm saying? Like, he didn't land Tavares.
Right.
Shouldn't that be accounted for when you're considering who should win the executive of the year? The guy that everyone knew you were trying to sign, but you couldn't?
See, I think executive of the year, a guy like Mark Bergevin did a really good job.
If they get in.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, but okay, so let's look at, like, should Claude Julien be in the conversation? Boston's a team that's had nothing but adversity.
Claude Julien in Montreal?
I'm sorry, not Claude Julien.
Bruce Cassidy.
Bruce Cassidy.
Yes, absolutely,
I
should be.
Misspoke. Yes, Bruce Cassidy.
I'll be honest with you, executive of the year should be a repeat. George McPhee should win it again.
Think so?
Absolutely. I think he should win it for the next 15 years straight. The fact that they made the play, they made it to the Cup final in their first year, and he didn't rest on his laurels. He said, "Go ahead, James Neal, leave. David Perron, leave. I'm going to go out there and I'm going to sign Paul Stastny. Yeah. I'm going to trade for Max Pacioretty, and I'm going to trade for Mark Stone.
Yeah.
He should win it again. I think that's your executive of the year.
I think Calgary.
Yeah,
Brad
Calgary. Maybe Lou steps in there. Brought in Robin Leonard. Maybe that's it though.
Well, we were just talking about that momentarily ago, moments ago, and I made the point that I figured you heard. the fact that he didn't land John Tavares, I think, should take him out of the running. Yeah. If you're the executive and your biggest job is to sign players and you can't re-sign the biggest free agent in the history of your team, you're out.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome.
I was looking at the J-Lo stuff.
That A-Rod story's really got your mind buzzing.
I had to. I actually borrowed his charger to start my computer just to read up on it.
Do me a favor and don't ever do that again. Noodles, don't ever give this guy chargers.
It's all good.
You all good now? Yeah. I think, listen, Lou's done some decent things. I just think, again, you miss out on Tavares.
But you think Stastny, Stone, and Pacioretty?
Absolutely. Who's done a better job than that? Who's put together a full line that is explosive over the last 12 months, like George McPhee has in Vegas?
Like I say, if Montreal makes it, maybe Bergie.
What about Kyle Dubas for landing John Tavares? Does he get any credit for that?
I don't know.
He gets credit, but I don't think he gets executive of the year for that.
If this guy came out and flat said that that's been my dream my whole life, Kyle Dubas, he just opened the door and said, okay, come on through, here's a contract.
Doug Wilson bringing in Erik Karlsson. Nyquist.
He hasn't played enough. Erik Karlsson has been hurt.
I think Calgary could be...
Yeah.
Like, I think Tree Living...
He's made some
couple nice trades.
But even his biggest move was James Neal. The guy hasn't done anything.
Yeah. He's been injured, and now he's come back. He's only at 7 goals, I think.
Here's Steve Phillips, our TSN 1050 Jays reporter. Or analyst, baseball analyst, whatever. We're off today. Sorry about that, Steve. But how you doing, buddy?
Hey, I'm all right. Whatever. I'm good.
Okay. Good to hear.
I'm good, guys. Good to be with you.
Yeah, it's great to have you on. So when you were managing the Mets, when you were the GM of the Mets, you would have been in Montreal a lot, I'm assuming.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. When we, they were in our division at the time.
Right.
So absolutely. In fact, it was the one place that I actually had to have an alias on the road, and I had to have security take me from the team bus into the hotel. Couldn't go on the field for batting practice, and because there was a sort of a crazy guy that wasn't quite mentally stable that had made threats against me, that his psychologist called and said I should be careful, and he had made threats, so you know they had to warn me. So I had an alias on the road. Sam Adams, by the way, was my alias.
Really?
I thought that was a pretty good one.
That's not bad at all.
Thank you.
So how, like, take us through that. Did he get to you personally, or did it go through the team?
Interesting. So I had a number of these sort of crazy folks. It's amazing, right?
Like, yeah,
kidding. I'm so non-controversial. I'm just a white-haired guy that, we got a phone call that the psychiatrist called and said that her patient was a threat to my life, this fella in New Jersey somewhere, and that, you know, she was able to violate the confidentiality because it was a physical threat, personal threat. So they alerted me of that, and I alerted Major League Baseball security. They then followed the guy for a couple of weeks, and they came back to report to me that, look, we don't think he'd probably hurt you. We think that he might hurt himself in front of you, but, you know, we should take precautions, so don't take the same road home every day. Make sure you're checking to see you're not being followed. And when you go to Philadelphia and Montreal, you should probably take extra precautions. So I had Major League Baseball security take me off of the team bus to the lobby of the hotel. They would go to my hotel room after the games and check it to make sure that he wasn't in my room waiting for me. And I couldn't go on the field for batting practice. And they thought maybe I should use an alias just for protection. But yeah, I couldn't go out of the room during the day. It was it was a little challenging. And look, I had a guy call up and say he wished I'd die a slow, painful death and that my family gets in an accident because we didn't get Alex Rodriguez back in the day. And had another fella that kept coming by the stadium. He said, "Where's Phillips? He's giving all this money to players. I want some money." And so the first day he was okay and was, you know, wasn't belligerent. He gave his name and no big deal. They took his ID and took a picture and everything. Then the next time he came, he started getting threatening. The third time he came, he was living out of a bag, and they tried to grab him because of the threats he was making. And he takes off running, but he leaves behind the bag, and the bag had a Bible in it. And security guys get a little, you know, they get a little freaked out when they, you know, there's a Bible. They start looking to see if there's notes or like maybe he's hearing voices and that. But they got a restraining order against that guy, and they end up putting him in a psychiatric hospital. And so, you want to be a general manager? Wow.
No, that doesn't sound very enticing. And, you know, from a selfish perspective, I guess the one thing that stood out to me is you didn't get to enjoy the nightlife of Montreal.
No, oh, well, no,
that's
no.
That's disappointing,
I'm locked down.
So
lockdown.
What yeah. about what about your players?
Grab a wig and a mustache
off yeah. the shape.
So interestingly, yeah. the players always seem to have team meetings when we were in Montreal. For whatever reason, that was when they wanted everybody to get together in a team meeting. At some place called Chez Paris. Yes. I don't know. It sounded like a meeting place, yeah. Is what I understood.
It's like a convention center, I think.
I think so, yeah. I think it's,
well,
that's
it's connected a playground.
To the convention center. Yeah.
That's what I was getting to here. Like, Montreal, I would think, for a team on the road back in the heyday, that had to be a spot where you must have been a little bit concerned. Like, are my players going to show up on time tomorrow?
You know when you see, like, kids walking down the street and they're all holding onto a rope? Because, you know, you don't want to lose any of them if they're on a little field trip or something. I felt like we needed to sort of have that when we went there, that we had to do a head check, a head count, every time we got to the ballpark the next day. But, you know, for the most part, guys showed up.
Right, which is important. They are professionals. With Steve Phillips, our TSN 1050 Jays reporter. I keep saying that. Jays analyst.
Yeah.
Here on Overdrive, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. So it sounds like the Jays... We know what their roster is going to look like. They obviously were dealt with a ton of injuries throughout the spring, a lot of them to the arms. Baraki's going to miss at least a couple of starts, and a couple of bullpen arms aren't going to be available to them. Personally, I don't think it makes that big of a difference, though, Steve. You know, I've been saying this for weeks. When I look at this roster, whether it's the rotation, the bullpen, the bats, I don't see 70 wins. I can't find 70 wins. Can you change my mind?
No, I don't think I can. I'm with you. I've got them in the 60s myself. And we're going to come out with a predictions piece tomorrow for .ca, and Scott Mitchell and I are. And, you know, we're fairly close to each other in our prediction about how many wins the Jays will get, although I'm in the 60s and he's not. I just look at it, too, and I think, all right, you know, you've got the starters with Stroman and Sanchez, who could both be pretty good. The problem is if they're good... Then the health of the bullpen becomes a factor that you may end up blowing leads because you don't have a healthy bullpen. And then comes July 31st, where if Stroman and Sanchez are healthy, they likely get traded. And that means the final 2 months of the season, you don't have your two, you know, more veteran starting pitchers. You may trade some of the veteran relievers. Then you're real young after that. And so, you know, I just look at it and think you're playing 57 games against the Rays and Red Sox. You know, so that's a pretty good chunk of it there. You're going to play the Indians, you're going to play the Astros, and then you're going to you hope to be .500 maybe against teams like the Tigers and White Sox and Royals, who are rebuilding just like the Blue Jays are. And so, yeah, I stretched it into the higher 60s, but I'm short of 70 myself. And here's the thing. It's, you know, what is deemed a successful season? Right, is a legitimate question. So normally you think, all right, well, the most wins you get is success. Wins and losses is an easy way to gauge it. Revenues generated. But here's a team that you know going in isn't going to win a lot of games, and their revenues are going to go down because people aren't going to go and watch them as much because they're not as competitive a team. So what is success? And success for them this year is answering questions, figuring out who's part of the problem, who's part of the solution, and who can be part of building that winning team that you hope to bring together a couple years down the road.
How would you handicap the chances of Toronto Blue Jay fans seeing Bo Bichette play in the majors this season?
You know, I think it's remote for the Blue Jays. I personally would keep an open mind about it. You know, you're already pushing back Vladimir Guerrero Jr. until May. If he has any other setback at all, it could be into June. While he's rehabbing, you've got Bo Bichette developing, and why not link those two together? Now, I could also see a scenario where if Vladimir Guerrero Jr., you know, starts to play in games again, and let's say that he gets another oblique strain, it takes him into June, then, you know what, he maybe gets a little hamstring, you got to make sure he's ready, and it's the All-Star break. At some point, that line where you think, all right, if we're going to be a 68 this year, why call it year? Let's buy the extra year on the back end as well. Now, everybody's going to get up in arms about it, but it would cross my mind about whether to bring them up at all, either one of them, if it's going to be a 68-win season and I can't get 100 to 115 games out of the two guys.
What do you make of this players' poll where the most overrated voted by the players is Bryce Harper, and right behind that is Marcus Stroman?
Now it's interesting. I bet Marcus thinks, all right, I'm second. That's pretty good to Bryce Harper. That's not bad. The dude just got $330 million. Derek Jeter is always one of the most overrated players. And so I never know what to make out of it. What that means to everybody is a little bit different. And I think for Marcus, I think that he, because he talks a lot, because he has a lot to say, typically guys who are high-end performers, you can talk a lot. When you're not performing, you can't. And if you keep talking, people think, well, what's he talking so much for? He's not getting anything done on the field. And I think there's some connection in that the lesser performance and making too much noise. Like, I mean, they're not saying it about Aaron Sanchez, but it's because he's quiet and just goes about his business. Marcus talks more like a guy that wants attention, should get attention, rather than sort of letting his talking get field.
Steve, what do you make about the DeGrom contract? It was just, I think, yesterday where Noah Syndergaard came out bitching and complaining that they got to get this guy signed. Is that any kind of reaction from the Mets, or is that something that's been in the works and it just hasn't been talked about?
No, you know what that's like? That's like when a manager calls a team meeting the day before playing the last place team. So what you do is you have that team meeting against the team you know you're going to pummel anyways, and it looks like, boy, what a great team meeting. Well done by the manager. It was just good timing by Syndergaard. He may have actually even known at the time that it might be close. And DeGrom came out and said the other day that he wasn't optimistic. That was calculated for me. That anytime you make a public statement in a negotiation, it was the last little nudge that he said to sort of get them moving. And I think the sale deal getting done gave them a threshold because there's some linkage to the sale deal and DeGrom's deal. They both have opt-outs after the 2022 season. DeGrom's that makes $107 million through 2022, where Sale makes $105 million. So it seems to me there was some slotting going on there that was probably affecting the timing more than anything else.
But quickly, as a manager, you're not going and looking at the comment section saying, oh, man, everyone's just outraged. I got to get this done, are you?
No, never, never. I never. You cannot let fans or players or coaching staff or anybody force you into a personnel decision, because you will make bad decisions and you will get fired for it. So you've got to do what you think is right, even when you're going to get death threats and stalkers, effectively, because you think it's going to lead to potentially getting to the playoffs. But you're right. There is a lot of noise out there, but you got to block it out.
Well, we're glad you survived everything, Steve.
Yeah.
It's great having you on, buddy, and the season right around the corner. So,
well, you never know. I mean, I'm in the New York area, and there's a lot of Mets fans that still hold grudges. So, I always look over my shoulder just to be safe.
Yeah, just be careful, all right, buddy?
All right, man. Thanks.
Thank you. There's Steve Phillips, our TSN 1050 Jays analyst, and him and Scotty Mitchell up on TSN.ca. They're going to have their season preview coming up, and I guess, he kind of alluded to the idea that Scotty's going to have them somewhere in the 70s. For wins, but he's looking at this
that's
roster the same
high.
Way. I am. No, of course not. If they get 72, 73 wins, you're way out of it. There's no chance they're not in a playoff race.
They're not getting 90 wins.
No
any
way.
Chance.
Not with this roster. They're brutal. Like, the Blue Jays are terrible. Look at their roster. It is awful. Like, I don't know which part of their makeup is worse. The bats, the rotation, the bullpen.
It's like journeyman central.
They're terrible. It's not going to be good. I mean, when Vladdy comes up, that's going to add,
boost.
There'll be a boost. There'll be a reason to watch. And if Bo Bichette comes up, a reason to watch. I mean, they got those two kids, and they're going to be studs.
Right.
But this year is not your year if you're banking on, a World Series contention team. It's not going to happen. Don't forget, TSN 1050's Up Close and Unfiltered series is returning just in time for the playoffs, and it's all happening down at Toronto's Amsterdam Brewhouse down on the Queen's Quay, which is TSN 1050's playoff headquarters. On Monday, April 8th, join your favorite 1050 personalities for a night of Maple Leaf and Raptors hot takes leading into the playoffs. There's no charge, and tickets are not required. Just show up before 8 p.m. on April 8th, and we're all going to be down there. We're looking forward to it. Bob McKenzie, your hockey insider, on John Tavares, his pursuit for 50, the body language of Freddie Anderson last night, back into the Drew Doughty comments, And how much money is John Cooper now making down in Tampa? We'll see if Bob has that info. Bobby Mack in studio next. All right, we'll get to our best bets brought to you by ProLine later in the hour. The Raptors in action tonight, taking on the Bulls. We'll tee that up as well. But Bob McKenzie, our TSN Hockey Insider, in studio. And the new digs.
New digs, very nice.
How you feeling in here, Bob?
Good. I feel like we should just bring Gino over and do a That's Hockey.
That's what it looks like, doesn't it?
It does, and I'm on That's Hockey next, and be easier. I wouldn't have to run across the parking lot. We'll do it
put
here.
Put Gino over there and do it.
Let's go through the emails. We'll figure out what they're talking about, and we'll just...
Should we just hijack every topic?
That would be hilarious.
Yeah, we should.
Because we know the topics. Be like, what do you think of...
Are you both on the show?
I'm not tonight. I'm doing the Senators panel, but I imagine your lead would be...
Can't tell you.
Oh, yeah. Leafs are always chat number one, no matter what. You say, why? Well, they practiced today.
They practiced. I don't even know if they did practice today. I think they did, but...
I will say that my biggest thing for the Leafs still is health. Like, I want to continue the track, the progression of Dermott and Gardner.
Yeah. Well, I think they're getting closer. I don't know what you've heard, Bob,
sounds
but
like.
I think Dermott's going to play it
any day now. If he doesn't play Wednesday, it sounds like he's getting real close. So that's a positive development. And Callie Rosen's back from his fractured foot. They just want to get him a little bit more of action in the American League. And you know, he's a left-shot option. And you might as well bring him in and see what he's going to do, because he had an outstanding year last year and was fantastic in the Calder Cup playoffs. He was having another fantastic year this year. And I think the plan was to bring him up after the deadline, no matter what. But then he had this fractured foot. The reality is, as I look at it, he's on their team next year.
Well, they gave him that extension, didn't they?
Yeah, and I think he's kind of penciled in as your third pair left side guy.
You think the team's going to continue the... I'm sure they're hoping they're not going to get the opportunity to go over to the World Championships and scout around, but... The Borgmans and Ozhiganovs, and maybe knock that off, or you got to keep taking.
Well, I think I think they'll keep taking swings within reason at that. I mean, Ozhiganov, my guess is he won't be on the team next year. That's just a guess. And the only reason he won't be on the team is not that he's not a serviceable depth defenseman in the National Hockey League. He's just going to expect more money than they're prepared to pay him. And he could probably make more money in the KHL. And being a seventh guy on the Leafs, or a six or a seven or an eight, probably doesn't turn his crank too much. And so it becomes just economics 101 that he's less likely to be here than more likely to be here next year.
Is that why they didn't send him down? Because I think they had the option. I think he was waiver exempt. And they didn't send Ozhiganov down at any point. Was it the fear that
I don't know.
He'll
I'm
just
not
go
sure.
right back to
but
Russia?
I suppose that's always a fear when you've got that option. And then you say, well,
thanks, but no.
Didn't sign up to be in the American League. And that's the risk you run when you do sign some Russians who aren't prepared to go to the minors.
That's what Yakupov did to the Oilers years ago. Like, he should have been in the minors. And remember the fear, Kevin Lowe was like, well, this guy's going to take his net and go home. He's going to go back to the K.
It's interesting because it varies from player to player, organization to organization. St. Louis Blues have a first-round pick, Klim Kostin. He's in his second full season in the American Hockey League. We saw him at the World Juniors, and he's no problem with it. But there are guys, especially the guys that sign as free agents, and they think they're going to get an NHL shot. And Ozhiganov kind of got his shot, but he didn't really, seize it in terms of being a top-six guy on a regular basis. At least not on the Leafs. And so we'll see where it goes once the season's over.
Bob McKenzie, your Hockey Insider in studio. So I had a take earlier in the hour. And,
hot take?
It was quite hot. Although I think it's reasonable. And I think it's really room temperature. I think it should be applicable.
I don't know which one you're talking.
Executive of the year.
Oh, yeah.
George McPhee should win it again. As far as I'm concerned, Vegas, the fact that they're still in the playoffs, again, they're 2 years into existence, but he goes out there and acquires, he signs Stastny, trades for Pacioretty, and then trades for Mark Stone. Who's done better work?
Pretty good.
There you go. He got Bob's vote.
Now, the thing about the executive of the year, though, unlike all the other awards in the National Hockey League, it's regular season plus a chunk of the playoffs.
Really?
And I say a chunk of the playoffs because the voting doesn't take place for the executive of the year until sometime in the conference final. And it's the only award.
So you guys do your voting after the regular season's over?
For all the PHWA, all the main trophies. See, the executive of the year is a little bit different. It's a league trophy, but it's not decided at the end of the regular season. All the other stuff, you know, your Calder, your Norris, your Adams, your Vezina, first all-star teams.
Like April
20th, yeah, it's all got to be in before the playoffs start.
Yeah.
But the executive of the year is voted on, I think it's usually sometime after the second round is over, kind of during the third round or thereabouts.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a result, you know, if Vegas were to go out in the first round of the playoffs,
well, I'll change my take.
Right, exactly. So let's say San Jose has an unbelievable great run and they get to the Cup final again, and you're like, ooh, Doug Wilson, he got Erik Karlsson, and he did this and he did that, and you know, give him from what he did last year, getting Evander Kane and mm-hmm. whatever. But you come up with all the rationalizations for the moves a guy made because he happens to be in the Final Four or going to the Cup final.
Well, let me throw my other take at you, because
okay.
It's all about me and
this
my hot
good.
Takes.
Yes.
I said Lou Lamoriello should not get any votes because he didn't sign John Tavares. As the executive, that's your big thing.
I'm not buying that.
You're not buying that?
I'm not buying that.
We weren't buying that either.
You guys are three of you on that
you're
side of Gino's desk.
We had the question
you're
twice.
On an island.
We had to go through the conversation twice.
Right.
Him and I had it first, and then him. Those two had it.
I think you
jumped in later.
Right.
So
but you don't
three
sign
for
the
three, are we?
No. He wasn't paying attention, so we had to circle back
okay.
on the conversation.
Right.
Well,
it happens.
It's a new studio.
Yeah.
But I think if you can't sign the biggest free agent in the history of your franchise, that's his job.
Yeah, but stuff happens. It's what you do afterwards, and it's a results-oriented business. So if the New York Islanders should end up with more points than the Toronto Maple Leafs, what does that say?
That Dubas should not get votes for the executive of the year.
And that Lou, if they end up with more points than the Leafs, and Lou's big acquisitions were Matt Martin,
Komarov.
And Leo Komarov.
Right.
And Leonard.
Robin Leonard. Yeah.
And Barry Trotz, I guess.
Yeah,
he did hire
Barry
Trotz.
Barry Trotz was a big one. But it's funny, the Islanders, it's weird. I don't ever recall a team that's played this well. And their entire first line, assuming they're still playing together, but you've got...
Unrestricted.
They're all unrestricted. Yeah. Eberle, Lee, and Nelson. All three of them unrestricted. You've got Robin Leonard, unrestricted.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, you know, that's just Lou, and he'll say we'll take care of business when the season's over.
Well, he's got a lot
that,
to be happy
that
about.
Anders Lee could be one of the best goal scorers in the league under the radar. This guy's 30-plus goals every year. He's a house, like an absolute beast of a man.
Yep.
And nobody's talking
about
this
guy. He's the best goal scorer that nobody ever
knows. But nobody's talking about, like, Anders Lee's going to cash in this summer.
Yeah.
Like, where's the lineup for Anders Lee?
Right.
His agents open doors and stuff. Like, it's I almost feel like it's a foregone conclusion that Lou's going to be like, yeah, we'll bring you back. Here's a number, and he'll sign there. He's a captain.
Wouldn't you think he gets, like, the James Neal contract, basically, or more? Think he gets more than James Neal?
This guy's a 35 goal scorer.
Yeah.
If he gets something with a five in it, his agent should be fired.
Yeah, okay.
I'm talking
Neil Sheehy's his agent, and Neil's been at a lot of Islander games lately, and I'm not sure how much actual contract dialogue is going on, because Lou's not a big guy for... I'm sure Lou has indicated, we want to sign you, we're going to sign you, just let's play hockey, and then we'll take care of business.
Yeah, it's pretty quiet, generally,
okay, so,
when Lou's running the operation.
Who's better, Nylander or Lee? Nylander just got $7 million. Lee scored 40 goals last year.
Mm.
Nylander's never scored more than 22
and
60 points.
And Lee had 34 the year before?
34 the year before. He had 62 points last year. He's got 27 goals this year, so he's going to probably hit 30 or close to it. Like, that's 3 years at 30-plus or 40 on the one.
How old is he?
27.
28.
Yeah, he's going to get paid.
Yeah, that's like what
should,
I mean.
He
like
should
it's
get
probably
paid.
Something with a 7.
So the Van Riemsdyk contract?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, 6'3", 230.
Yeah.
He's a house.
I'm acting as if I've never heard the guy before.
Well, no, but that's the thing.
I understand
it. He just blends in because he's a really good player.
Right.
It's crazy to think. Like, we were talking yesterday, raving about that Josh Anderson, you know, in Columbus. Like, that kid sat out. He's a house of a man that can move. But you look through the league, that's where a manager has to find somebody like that who flies under the radar and give you 30 goals, and he's a captain material. And he, by all accounts, it sounds like he's a real quality person, too. I know he's a Minnesota kid. Apparently, he could have been a quarterback.
Yeah, okay. Like, great athlete.
Yeah, good athlete. But I don't even know what the marketplace is for an Anders Lee. It could be the JVR.
He'll get paid for sure. I wonder what Drew Doughty thinks about Anders Lee. What his opinion
is. Just ask him. He'll tell you.
I love Doughty.
He went off yesterday.
What do you make of that?
He always does it in Canada, if you've ever figured that out. Whenever they get into Canada, they know the mics are on and the cameras are on, and that's when they usually spout off.
Yeah, you know what? Like, I can understand if somebody wants to disagree with what he said, but let's applaud him for having some personality.
I love
it. Making things interesting and it's, you know, and being outside the norms of what people expect from hockey players. I have no problem with personality, and you got to make sure that you understand all the context, because, you know, everybody's saying he took a shot at Brent Burns, and he did. He talked about Brent Burns' defensive game, which he didn't think was up to snuff. But he also waxed poetic about what a great offensive defenseman Brent Burns is. But people always gravitate towards the negative side of anything, as opposed to, nobody wants to hear a compliment, everybody wants to hear an insult.
Right.
So,
well, the one thing I would say is I didn't like that he was speaking on behalf of the whole league.
Yeah, nobody likes
Matthew Tkachuk, you know. And I thought Brady handled it beautifully today. So, well, his teammates like him a lot.
Yeah.
And that's really all that matters.
Yeah.
Now, who cares if Drew Doughty doesn't like Matthew Tkachuk?
Yeah.
Why would he?
I guarantee if I ask people in Calgary, they love Matthew Tkachuk, the players, the fans, everything. Like, this guy.
Sign up the whole Tkachuk family.
How can't you? Like, that family, they're beasts. Like, the dad was a great player. Both of his sons are, like, Matthew's a great player, and I think Brady has a chance of being a great player.
Absolutely.
Like, that's
both
that's
future captains, you think?
I'd say.
Yeah, I would say. Like, Brady's a, I'm around him a lot. Like, that's a kid you can tell that has been brought up in a hockey environment, like, that just gets it.
They're both game changers. They're both guys that have a visceral impact on the game. Like, you can't not look at Brady Tkachuk and just think, this is fun.
Something's happening.
This is good.
The only thing that would prevent Matthew from being a captain is, I mean, there's guys like Monahan there. Like, he's just so involved in the penalties and the punching.
Although he's gotten way better.
But still, he's one of those guys that's just going to be in the mix all the time. Do you want him talking to the refs all night? I don't know if that would be your guy.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think that's maturity, though. It comes with that responsibility.
Oh, yeah. 2 years ago, he was an idiot on the ice. He was doing stupid stuff.
Well, he had the Detroit incident. Was that last year or the year before with that?
He's on the bench, wasn't he?
Yeah, he jousted with that.
He needed to get a little more focused, and I think he has.
Yeah.
He's a player.
In spite of what Drew said.
Bob McKenzie, your Hockey Insider in studio. John Cooper, head coach of Tampa, with an extension. He was a free agent.
Yep.
And, you know, is he making Babcock money?
No, I don't think so. So far, it's a closely guarded secret in terms of the term and the dollars. And don't kid yourself, all the coaches in the National Hockey League are like, what did he get? What did he get? And eventually it'll probably, you know, the coaches like salary disclosure for the most part. And I'm sure Tampa wants it kept quiet. And they probably told Cooper, saying, hey, we're going to give you this money, but we don't want you blabbing about it. And that, but the coaches like salary disclosure because for all the same reasons that you guys got more money, because Bob Goodenough was smart enough to figure out if every player knows what every other player is making, we're all going to make more money.
Exactly.
And if all the coaches know exactly what everybody's making. So they try to do a good job now of making sure that the fraternity understands who's getting what. So anyways, the big question was John Cooper going to be able to sneak his way into the $4 million stratosphere? So you got Babs at six and Quenville up there. And the sense seems to be that it's probably, the average is probably in the threes. And that if he gets to four, maybe it's in the final year of the contract. We don't even know how long the extension is. So
I was just going to say, it wouldn't shock me if it was like 3.75 or some.
Yeah, honestly, I have no idea. But I'm going to guess it's like, you know, 3.5, give or take
So 3, 5, and Tampa, no state tax.
Yeah, exactly. And when we talked about this unique situation of him being on an expiring contract and winning the President's Trophy and maybe being the favorite to win the Stanley Cup, we noted that all the players in Tampa, whether it's Kucherov or Hedman or Stamkos or on and on down the line, they all took less than market value. And you could probably argue that John Cooper's taking less than market value.
You know what he was making before?
Yeah, 2.25.
Oh, so he's probably making some cake.
We should. Even if it's $1.5 million more, that puts it at 3.75. Like that's, and if it's got any term attached, what did Barry Trotz sign for? 20? It was 4 a year, 20 million. I thought I.
That's
four
a
times
lot.
Five,
that's,
wasn't it?
Yeah,
he's getting
I don't
5 a year.
Off the
wow.
Top of
no,
my
no,
head.
No. 4 a year times five.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. I believe that's what I. Yeah, I thought think, I remember yeah, it was a $20 million deal.
I keep forgetting all the coaches' salaries, and I wish there was a cap friendly for coaches so we could look it up.
Yeah. Well, Babcock signed 4 years ago. You would think with the cap going up at some
an
point.
An 8 year deal?
Yeah, it was 8 years, $6 million, 4 years
but
ago.
You know, the funny thing is, we all assume when Babcock signed, and he did create a ripple effect because Todd McClellan got $4 million and Joel Quenneville got his money, and it was closer to Babcock money. And we thought that all the coaches' salaries would come up. And what happened is a small group did, but then there was a lot of coaches got hired, and they were much. You know, some guys were making less than $1 million or around $1 million, and so a lot of teams started to go the bargain route as opposed to paying the $4, 5, 6 million a year. And so I guess it really depends how much leverage you got.
Right. Well, no salary cap, no salary floor.
But that's
either
you're,
with coaching
you're right,
staff.
But I mean, that's you. A lot of times you get what you pay for, unless you're a coach that's just starting out.
Well, I'm gonna guess, just a guess, because I don't know. I'm going to guess Rod Brind'Amour is not making a lot of money.
No,
yeah,
and
when
he is
you start,
not.
And I would say, you know, you want to start. Everybody had talk at winning or being in the Coach of the Year conversation when Arizona was in the playoffs. Well, now they're back out. So, you know, if they get back in, I'm sure some people will vote Rick Tocchet, and he's done a great job. I'm not arguing that and that, but I've been really impressed with Brind'Amour. Mm-hmm. You know what I really like is the Hurricanes have. Quite aside from the debate over the storm surge and the celebration, the Hurricanes do a really good job with social media. And after a lot of games, they put up 60 seconds of Brind'Amour talking to the team. They did
it
the other night.
It's good stuff.
And it's really good because it's legit. And you can tell that Brind'Amour is really earnest. But and what they're nobody's playing to the camera. It's just like the camera's there and he's actually talking to the players. And when they won that game the other night, he basically apologized because I guess he probably torpedoed the players after the second intermission. And he goes, sorry, guys, but I feel like you're my kids, and I know you're so much better than what you were showing. And you could tell the genuine affection between them. And it's kind of cool to see a team and a coach. And again, they're winning, so everything's wonderful. But that was kind of cool. And I've been impressed with just the way Brind'Amour's carrying himself and that, because there could be a tendency, because he was... You know, you know him.
I sat beside him.
He's such a driven guy, and he used to be, and that, and it seems to me, I'm sure he still is, but he seems to have that lighter touch and sense that, hey, I got a bunch of millennials here. I can't just say, get in the weight room and work as hard as I did.
Right.
You know?
Absolutely. You got to get your message across.
I think he just looks to me like a guy that's got a rapport and a feel for a lot of those kids on the team, and they are kids. And I think that's really impressive and cool to see.
Thanks for joining us here on That's Hockey.
Buddy, you're going to blow your back out. I know it. You have to lean over. Like
it's these new mics, man.
Yeah, I said we got to get mics that have a
little bend.
A joint that bends.
You are going to have a bad.
Oh, my back's already wonky.
I feel like
bed back
sit
and
on
beyond.
A pillow.
Yes. A mattress topper. That's the new thing.
You're going to take the mattress topper, roll it up, put it behind your back.
Absolutely. It saves backs. The best sleep you'll ever have, and it'll save your back. In the new Overdrive studio.
Get yourself a MyPillow.
That's right. All right, Bob. Good seeing
you. All right,
you.
Boys. Thanks.
Bob McKenzie, your hockey insider. It's not exclusively our studio. Everyone's in here, but...
It's ours.
From 4 to 7, it's exclusively
ours. We're taking
ours.
It. We're calling it ours.
That's right. We'll get to our best bets brought to you by ProLine. Tee up the Raptor game next. Time now for our best bets brought to you by ProLine. Looking at the NBA board tonight. San Antonio at Charlotte. I'm on Charlotte, +3 at home. Coming off the heroics a couple of nights ago at Scotiabank. And Boston laying 5.5 at Cleveland. I'm on the Celtics tonight. Throw down 20, you can score 40. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio and get way into the game with ProLine. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. ProLine, get way into the game. Raptors, Bulls tonight. This should be a layup for the Raps. Chicago's tanking. They're terrible. Pick up a W. Move it on. Let's get to the playoffs.
Load manage.
Do whatever you've got to. Honestly, I think load management, that term, should be more prevalent with the Maple Leafs right now than the Raptors.
I agree. Last 10 days before you wrap it up. Who would you load manage down the stretch here for the Maple Leafs?
Well, Freddie's an obvious.
Okay, so six starts, 3-3. That's load
three
management.
3-3 load management.
Okay.
I don't think he would accept it, but Patrick Marleau would be sitting.
What about Ronnie Hainsey?
Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Morgan Riley's been racking up minutes. Now, he may not want to come out because of the Norris. And
right. I think he's, if he's not a, he's a lock to be a finalist for the Norris. He's a lock.
70 points. And
he may win it. Everyone's leaning Gio. I think Brent Burns is in there. I mean, there's Hedman. Like, again, it comes back to people just look at points, but how does Hedman not at least be in the conversation as well? He's an absolute beast. So, you know, it's. I wish
that Hedman's almost getting close to that Pronger type treatment where he's going to be nominated every year. Like, he's just awesome. He's so awesome.
Good. He's so good. There was a play on the power play last night, and you could tell, like, Pastrnak and Marchand, like, they got a lot of those set plays, and Hedman was, like, not having
not
it.
Not biting.
Boom. Like, just not he's so big. He is like Pronger, 6'6", and strong on his skates and that. Just shut the play down immediately. He's a legit player. But, I mean, Morgan Riley has to be there. Who else is there that you would... Like, Austin's played.
I think Matthews, you're going to play. Tavares, you're probably going to play.
But what about a guy like Marner?
Maybe.
Like, I know he might want 100 points. He wants to get to 100. At Tavares, when you get... But you also have to... It's not like these guys... This is probably where Babcock's like, this is why I haven't overtaxed them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm only playing them 18 minutes a night, 16 minutes a night.
No. So for me, it's Freddie, it's Hainsey, maybe Jake Muzzin, maybe. And it's Marleau. Like, those are the guys.
We talked about it last night.
I know that. I'm not saying Marlo's going to do it or accept it or they're going to ask him. But if it were up to me, yes. I'm going to Patrick Marleau. I'm saying
he's the first guy I go to.
We'll see you in game one. But you're done for the year.
Go on vacation. Go do something.
But did you see Babcock's comments about Marleau last night? Said he hasn't had a great season, but he said it's the best is yet to come.
Fountain of youth. Fountain and he'll find it. Which I think there's an element of truth in that. You know, Patrick Marleau's played so many regular season games. Like, let's get going here. Yeah. He came here to play in the playoffs.
Yeah.
To try to win in Toronto in the spring. And he had a great playoff round last year.
Yeah, he was good.
He was very good in the seven games.
He wasn't the problem.
No, he was not. If he can do that again, fine. No issues. But, you know, just based on his age, the amount of games he's played, he looks slower and tired. I mean, I would try to sit him. I would shut him down the rest of the season. But I know it's not going to happen. I understand it's a moot point.
Yeah.
But Freddie's really the focal point. Freddie's the guy. If he starts any more than three of the final six games, I think Babcock is playing a dangerous game.
Yeah.
I really do. I think his body language in the third last night, he was borderline putting up the white towel. Like, get me out of this net. I hate you guys. Why am I playing?
So,
you know.
But, I mean, yeah, the five spot isn't. It's regardless of the win, sometimes you're looking at the numbers. You're like, ugh, I don't like that one.
Yeah. Well, to your point, though, he wants to be up for a Vezina.
Yeah, and he should be.
And if the numbers keep chipping lower and lower and lower.
Well, all of a sudden you got people
talking. I'd give Freddie two more.
Him.
I'd give him Tampa Bay and Montreal last game of the season.
Well, that's back-to-back. I'd go maybe the final Saturdays. In Ottawa Saturday, in Montreal next Saturday. And you're like, you got two more games.
No island, though, on a Monday in the island?
I don't know.
Yeah, you could give him that one.
We'll talk about it tomorrow.
Yeah,
4 p.m.
Right here on TSN Radio and on TSN 4 tomorrow. Our TV debut for all 3 hours at 4 p.m.
We're dressing up. We'll chat then.